Hi, this is Chris, host of A Couple of Drips. Just before we start, I wanted to say a quick word about our subscribers' memberships. If you'd like to help support future episodes, you can subscribe to the show for a few pounds a month. This'll help fund production, coffee, and guest expenses. Simply click on the support button in the episode description. Cheers, and enjoy the show.
Is this thing working? Hello? Is anyone there?
Settle in and turn it up. It's time for A Couple of Drips. Coffee, conversation, and occasional quips. Here's your host, Chris Granger.
Welcome to A Couple of Drips. We are finally back. It's been such a long time, such a long hiatus. I can only apologize for what has been an anus horribilis. It has been a fucking awful 2021, an absolute nightmare of a year. It has been the year equivalent of a turd that floats and won't go down when you've just done your first poop at your new boss's house. And of course, there's no toilet brush. Oh, it's so good to be back. And I thought nothing better to do on this episode than welcome back a guest who, during lockdown, we could only talk to at a distance. To actually have him face to face in the studio is amazing. Please welcome Mr. Jamie Summerfield. Hello, sir.
Hello, Chris.
How are you? It's so nice to say you're a real person with flesh and things.
I exist. I am real, as are you.
I know, it's very strange, isn't it? How was lockdown for you? I mean, the last time we spoke, you were in the middle of working from home, and how have you found it now you've come out the other end? Are we out the other end?
I don't know. It feels that way, doesn't it? Mm. Let's hope so. Do you know what? I think lockdown one, that was enjoyable. Looking back,
yeah,
if you can,
bit of time at home, not driving into the office,
no cars on the roads, that kind of everything just went so slow, so still.
Yeah,
we had time to think.
Oh,
and that's dangerous.
Yeah, it was quite dangerous. Yeah,
it was good. I think the toughest one for me was the Christmas one.
Yes,
2020 to 2021.
Mm.
That was a nightmare.
Oh, wasn't it?
That was bad. Yeah. But do you know what? We're coming through it.
We came out the other side, and we're here and ready to have a good chat about, well, I won't reveal quite yet what today's episode is going to be discussing, but we'll start off with, I think we'll start off with the coffee, seeing as it's here and going cold. So let's have a look at the coffee.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All together now.
1, 2, 3, 4. Coffee time, it's coffee time. It doesn't matter if it's your place or mine. Coffee, they call it wine, a matter of pain. Brother of wine is better than tea.
I've not wasted my lockdown.
I can see what you've been up to.
Locked in here for months on end. I tell you what, yeah. So we had a rather lovely trip before Christmas, didn't we, Jamie?
We did. We went to Manchester.
Would you like to tell the boys and girls what we did?
Well, we went to Manchester, didn't we?
We did.
Had a wonderful day in Manchester. Drinking coffee.
Drinking coffee. We were, was it two or three thing. Coffee houses we went to? Two, I think.
I think only two, actually.
I think only two. Yeah. Nero to start with.
Yes.
And then, which we'll come on to in a minute, 200 degrees, which we'll come back to in a minute. But we were there for a very special occasion, weren't we?
We certainly were. We saw Mr. Rick Wakeman.
Mr. Richard Wakeman.
Mr. Richard Wakeman. Wakeman
doing his not quite so grumpy as last Christmas tour. Yeah. Which was incredibly enjoyable and very, very nice. And
it was beautiful.
He normally, I mean, you and I have been to these Wakeman concerts a few times, and it's normally just him and a piano. So to have him, and he had a couple of synths this time, played some wonderful stuff we'd never heard, including that Seahorses track. Do you remember that? That was amazing. If you've not heard Seahorses by Rick Wakeman, do check it out. It's beautiful. Sublime.
Beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful. So while we were there, we did quite a bit of coffee and something else which is to do with the subject of today, which we'll move on to in a minute. But well, we went to 200 degrees and we discovered a bit of a gem, did we not, Jamie?
I think it was the coffee highlight for me of last year. It was...
I thought you were going to say of your life then. I was going to say steady on, you know, they'll be putting the price up. Yes, no, it was remarkable. It's, what did you order? You ordered like a...
Did you just order
an Americano or something?
I did. I just went for their standard Americano, which I was absolutely delighted with. It was really beautiful.
Mm.
Enjoying it, and then you sat down with yours.
Meanwhile, while Jamie was at the till ordering an Americano, I was stood looking at the menu, and I noticed that they did do drip filter coffee. And I ordered their speciality Christmas coffee, which was called the Roast of Christmas Past.
Love the title.
Which was a Ugandan, for the coffee aficionados listening, it's grown at altitude 1300 to 1900 meters above sea level. It's a natural process, and it had hints of strawberry, dark chocolate, and walnut. It was so good. Well, you tried it, didn't you? You tried a bit of mine.
I did. I don't know what COVID regulation I broke, but I had a little sip.
The one where you're not supposed to share a coffee cup.
I had a little sip, and it blew me away.
Yeah.
It really is. You
it
know
was
that,
amazing.
That feeling when the coffee I had was kind of in two dimensions and it was good. And then all of a sudden, a sip of that Ugandan stuff, and it was like an explosion of colour.
That's
in three dimensions.
That's a really good way of putting it, actually. And I actually went, it was so good, I went up to the bar and said, can I buy some of this? And I was going to buy you a bag, but there was only one bag left. So I had it.
Yeah. That's,
yeah. Sorry about
that,
mate.
We need to talk about that.
That was a wonderful coffee, and it kind of made the day even better than it already was. So what are we drinking, Jamie?
Chris, this is a coffee from El Salvador called Las Luces.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Lots of S's there.
Lots of S's. And it's got, the card says that it's got hints of guava and kiwi.
Very nice.
And I think with it being a light coffee, you get that lovely light fruitiness.
I do like a light coffee, for that reason. Sometimes I think a dark coffee has been roasted dark to kind of hide a number of sins, you know. And who's this from?
It's a Pact coffee.
Love Pact coffee subscriptions. Fantastic.
Amazing subscriptions, aren't they?
Really good. This one, I believe, is on the middle tier of the three tiers that you can have.
Oh, okay.
But the nice thing about the Pact subscription, of course, is that they email you a week before you get your coffee to check that of the coffee they've chosen for you, you want that one.
Mm.
And then they send it, and you can change the date that it's sent out if you want. I think you can have anything from 60 days apart to a coffee bag sent every day.
Mm.
Why would you do that? Well, maybe. but you can also change the coffee before it's shipped. But the other nice thing about it is that about a week after you've had the coffee, they email you to ask you if you liked the coffee.
Mm.
And then you can star rate the coffee on the website. You will be offered that coffee again or not, depending on whether you like it. But also it allows you to blog your coffee, because you can put a few words with it as well. Mm. You can blog your coffee experience on their site, and that's always accessible from your account. So yeah, it's kind of a nice experience.
It's like a long-winded version of the Spotify algorithm.
Yeah.
So you punch in what you like over the months, and then you get just coffee that you that's suited to you.
Correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't there a real ale app that you used to use where you used to, you'd try an ale and then you'd blog about it, sort of thing?
Yeah, that's an amazing app. And typically now, I can't remember what it's called.
That's all right. Well, I'll get the name off you and put it in the blurb underneath the underneath the show description on Anchor.
It's brilliant. People post pictures of their beer with their little description, star ratings.
Very nice.
That's, really good way of finding out about new beers.
Beautiful, beautiful. Back to the coffee for a second. Yeah. What do you think? What would you rate this? What kind of flavours are you getting out of it?
I'm getting a really lovely kind of tropical fruit top note.
Very nice, very nice.
Which is really, I love that kind of.
I just say Jamie and I did a world's largest coffee tasting with James Hoffman about 18 months ago. Mm. And since then, he's been going on about mouthfeel, astringency, acidity. And I'm quite jealous because over lockdown, I think I had like a long COVID and I completely lost all the coffee started tasting the same to me.
Oh, yeah.
And it's only the last 2 months maybe that I've gone, oh, I can taste this and I can taste that. And it's all kind of coming back. But
that's horrible. Losing,
it was horrible.
Losing a sense like that, isn't it?
Yeah, especially when you look how much I was spending on coffee. And then I was going, can't taste the difference. It will taste like Nescafe.
You should have just bought Mellow Birds for a few months.
It would have made me smile. And on that note, talking of coffee and our love of coffee, if you do like what we do, if you fancy a packed subscription, drop me an email and I'll give you a code and we can get a fiver's worth of coffee each. But if you like what we do, you can actually buy us a coffee. Hi there, and thanks for listening to A Couple of Drips. If you like what we do and would like to help support future episodes, then you can do so by buying us a coffee. One-off donations or memberships are available. Just go to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/couple of drips. Thanks for your support. So when we're in Manchester and we were visiting Mr. Wakeman, we... obviously, after a couple of coffee shops, we started doing one of our other obsessions.
I think it's fair to call it that,
Chris. I think it's fair to call it an obsession. We don't do things by halves, do we? We could buy Nescafe. There's nothing wrong with Nescafe. But why buy Nescafe when you can make a V60 or an Aeropress or a Chemex or a Kalita or an Espresso or whatever you want? But our other obsession is vinyl. And there's been a bit of a kind of resurgence of vinyl during lockdown. And I have to confess, both Jamie and I have started fervently recollecting vinyl and kind of recapturing our youth. I mean, obviously, you've bought some recently, but previously to that, when was the last time you dusted off the old record player?
Wow, blimey. Do you know what? When we moved to the house where we live now in 2002.
Wow.
And up until that point, I'd played vinyl, all through my teenage years, young adulthood, and then made this bizarre decision in 2002 to put it all up in the loft.
Yeah.
We moved into the house. Thought, where's the record player going to go? We'll stick it in the loft.
Yeah.
Just for now. Just, it's not a permanent arrangement.
No.
And then, 19 years later,
the dust has gathered. The records have all warped in the sun. No, hopefully not.
No, not.
But so what's your vinyl history then? What was your when did you first start collecting?
The first record I ever bought was Vienna by Ultravox. That was like I used to get a pound pocket money every week.
Nice. Those were the days.
Those were the days. It went a long way. Well, it bought me a single. And yeah. I'd walk down into town and go to one of two places. Mm. Woolies. You could do a whole podcast on Woolworths.
Absolutely, yeah.
Or Bevan's record shop. It was run by Ellis Bevan, who was a very famous politician in Stoke. And he was Lord Mayor many times.
Oh.
And he was the man who saved Longton Town Hall. There's a beautiful building as you come under the railway bridge, and really beautiful town hall.
Kind of Victorian-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was in rack and ruin, and it was at one point in danger of being knocked down.
Yeah.
And he led this campaign.
It's on the opposite side of the road to the sex shop, isn't it?
No, it's... I think.
Don't pretend you don't know. Come on.
I've driven past.
Okay.
Almost crashed my car.
Yeah,
looked in the window. But yeah,
it's not what you're expecting, is it?
Not really.
In that area of Stoke-on-Trent.
He saved this place. And so he was a legend locally, but he'd always run this record shop. That was his trade, you know.
Yeah.
So I always used to buy a single from either there or Woolies every single week. Pound pocket money on
Friday.
So
when you said to your mum, I'm going to Burslem to buy some vinyl, she knew you were going to the record shop.
She did. She
she didn't think you were going on the other side of the road, is what I'm getting at.
Well, maybe she did. Maybe. I don't know. But I'd always come back clutching...
Teenage boys. not clutching teenage boys, obviously. Clutching records. So Vienna, that's an interesting... That's quite an epic first single, actually. Because I think my first record, well, my first single I remember buying was The Can Can by Bad Manners.
I bought that one too. I remember
which was fantastic.
That. Yeah.
And the reason I started buying it, and here's an interesting lead into going into doing podcasts, but the reason that I bought that particular record was because when I was a kid, I got a book out of the school library, which was How to Be a DJ.
Oh, nice.
And I always wanted to be a DJ as a kid. It was what I was going to do. I was going to be a disc jockey. And in the old sense, not in the sort of, you know, what a DJ is now, kind of mixing and scratching and sampling. It was like a hello, pop listeners, and welcome to the show. And you're listening to Fairport Convention. It was that type of DJ that I wanted to be, the type that go to family parties and talk all the way through the wedding, you know, sort of thing. But yeah, so I got this book out and I really wanted to do it. My dad said, well, what you need to do is you need to spend your pocket money on buying the number one single. It doesn't, the number one doesn't change every week, so you're not going to have to do it every single week, but you should buy the number one singles. Unbeknownst to me, sometimes some number ones get forgotten and it's the number twos or number threes that that kind of you know get remembered. Classic example, Aha, Take on Me, only made it to number two.
So what knocked that off the top spot?
I can't remember, but strangely, their follow-up single, The Sun Always Shines on TV, because there weren't as many sales that week, made it to number one, but it's not clearly not as good a record, you know.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, but I mean, but there you go. So I ended up with quite a large collection of singles. My first album was a Christmas present, and it was the soundtrack to Grease.
Okay.
What was your, can you remember what your first album was?
I can. The first album... and again, I think it was a Christmas present, and it was the Human League.
Dare, was it?
It was Dare.
Fabulous.
And, to this day, it remains just one of my favourites. And it also, it's not about the music with vinyl, is it? What I can remember about the Dare album is the photographs and the gatefold opening up to the close-ups on all the band members. And it's just, it's that first vinyl. But for me, it wasn't about collecting as such. It was just, I was obsessed from a really young age by music and by pop stars. I remember I must have spent about 6 months of my childhood, when I was about 8 or 9, dressed up as Adam Ant. I used to, I had the shirt, white shirt that he wore, little waistcoat. I'd use my mum's makeup to do the white stripe over my nose.
Wow.
And it was just, there was something about this stuff which just transported you somewhere else.
I guess you realised at the time that ridicule was nothing to be scared of.
I did. It was a harsh lesson, but through Adam Ant, I learned it.
Apologies to listeners if you heard some interesting bangs and noises during that bit of Jamie's. My headphone cable got stuck around the wheels of my chair. Anyone would think we're going out live, wouldn't you?
And that was the sound of me ad-libbing.
So, first record, we know. Last record you bought. And because you can probably remember, tell me where and when.
The last record that I bought on vinyl was bought at a wonderful bi-monthly record fair in Crewe, which we've been going to recently. And the album I bought was called Swimming by Mac Miller.
The late, great Mac Miller.
The late, great, yeah. He's
tragically gone before his time.
Yeah, he... I don't know how old he was when he died. He was very young, 26.
26, something like that, yeah. 26, 27.
Horrific.
Yeah.
It was a really sad case, yeah. Drugs overdose.
Yeah.
But he was one talented songwriter or musician.
Yeah.
It's really...
Your daughter actually introduced me to some of the stuff on Tiny Desk Concerts where he's playing with Thundercat. Absolutely amazing.
That's right.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
You bought up the record fairs there. I mean, these are something like the old computer fairs where you'd buy your bits for your PC. These are things that have kind of been around very much under the radar for years, secondhand record fairs. But obviously they must have almost died a death at one point, and then they're suddenly making a massive comeback, as is vinyl. I mean, what's your opinion really as to why there's such a vinyl resurgence at the moment?
Oh, it's a big question, isn't it? I mean, personally, for me, thinking that I didn't have vinyl in my life for 20 years after loving it.
Yeah.
The reason I reconnected with it, I think you asked about lockdowns earlier.
Yeah.
For me, it was in those lockdowns, I think we were all craving, I know I was, just that connection with people.
Yeah.
We just all felt so isolated and so disconnected from everything. And for me, vinyl really helped me to get that sense of reconnection back.
Do you think it was kind of recapturing your youth a little bit to some extent? Or is it more sort of was it more sort of looking for a lockdown hobby or feeling a kinship with other record buyers, or maybe a bit of all of those things.
Yeah. I think definitely you can't help it, can you? When you're playing vinyl, there's a bit of you that's still a teenager listening to music that you just do not get through listening to it on Spotify or other ways.
Yeah.
But for me, it's hard to explain. I love the community around vinyl. I love, record fairs, like you say.
I would agree with that. We've certainly been to the record fairs, and we've got to know, a few of the people there, like Kendall from Strand Records.
Yeah.
And, you know, always engage in a conversation, you know, and just know them through having that common hobby, that thing in common that you can talk about. So, I mean, that is a kind of, even though it's a hobby that started in lockdown, it's kind of since lockdown, it's helped connect with people a little bit more, which is kind of interesting. Yeah. But there is a thing I personally feel that if everything is available, then nothing has any value.
There's something to be said for that. I don't know about you, but on Spotify, you've literally got, or any of the other streaming services are available.
Deezer, Cubiz, Amazon Music.
Tons of them, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, you've literally got...
Tidal.
Tidal. high quality,
high quality
music. Well, you've literally got the history of recorded music at your fingertips.
Yeah.
And how many times have you kind of put Spotify on? You haven't got a clue what to play.
No,
It's no doubt that the rise of playlists and things like that.
Yeah.
Is because there's so much stuff there. You need help curating it in a way.
So, I mean, I don't know if you feel this, but I look at playlists and I think what someone has done here is they made a compilation tape.
That's what it is.
They've essentially said, there's too much here to listen to, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to make you a sample of the music that I think you'd like.
Mm, that's it.
It's a compilation album. It's a mixtape.
But do you know what it does? Mm. It basically becomes background music.
Yeah.
I found...
Because it's valueless now.
Yeah, and also because it feels more ephemeral and it feels less of a thing, an event, an occasion.
Mm.
Which I think when you listen to vinyl, you don't have that. You can, when I put an album on, it is a complete immersion in that music.
Yeah.
I'm not doing anything else. I love just, sitting, listening and properly soaking up that music. And I'd not done that for years. You know, it was very much on my peripheral music for years. And then vinyl just brought it slap bang in the centre of my life again.
Yeah.
And so that I'm really grateful for that. And I know that there's a sense of nostalgia and a sense of trying to reclaim the past around vinyl, but I think it's more than that.
Mm.
I think it's people, again, for me, I think it's about kicking back against this digital tsunami that we're all battling through and swimming in every day.
Yeah.
And just taking back a little bit of control against that.
And I think as was said on Tomorrow's World,
instead of a needle and cartridge, a laser beam picks up the track by reading that sequence of pits and spaces and converting it back into the pure sounds of the original music. Now, whether there's a market for this kind of disc remains to be seen.
Hindsight is a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Tomorrow's World.
Tomorrow's World.
Oh,
yeah.
Brilliant.
In fact... And that's as much as we can do with avoiding copyright. I mean, you talked about record fairs, obviously a great place to meet like-minded people and to buy second-hand records. But obviously there's new records there as well. Do you favour buying the new or the second-hand from the fairs? Which do you tend to look for?
Do you know what? Before I answer that, I think we should just give the Crewe Record Fair a bit of a plug because it's...
Go for it.
It's such a great event. It's in the old Victoria Market Hall in the centre of Crewe, right next to the Lyceum Theatre.
Yes.
And they've kind of...
Fantastic place to hold a record fair.
Yeah, and it's been transformed, that place, into... It seems to be the done thing now, but there's street food in there, you can get a beer in there, communal seating in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of have something to eat.
We have partaken of the street food... Several times.
We have gorgeous pizzas, burgers, Mexican.
So this is Crewe in Cheshire. So for anyone who's listening in Australia.
Come on over.
G'day, mate. You should come over and... Oh, I get done for that. Accent is that's appalling.
Well, yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it?
And fantastic.
When I'm there, I think it's the thrill.
Kid in a sweet shop.
It is. It's the thrill of not knowing what's going to be there. We've all got, I think... lists in our head, maybe even written down, of like records that we're looking for, that we want to find.
Mm.
And so you're kind of hoping that one of them will be there. There's always stuff that's there that just throws you, that you've forgotten about it, or it just looks so exciting or enticing.
Have you ever done that thing where you've got that one in your head that you're looking for, and you've gone to the record fair, and you've picked up five that you're going to buy, and that's basically your budget, is you're going to buy those five. And then you carry in those five around that you've purchased. And then you stumble across the record that you went there for in the first place.
Well, I remember, I think, was it the first time that we went? And we both said to each other, to save ourselves from spending too much money, we'll go to the cash point.
We'll go to the cash point. We'll take out a set amount.
Just what we need.
And then we can't spend any more than this.
I think three times.
Three times we went back to the cash point. Yeah. Easily done.
So, yeah, sticking to a budget's hard. No. But I don't think I've done that, you know. I think, I don't know if our kind of approach to the record fair is different. I kind of just, I've been burned before by seeing something that I really want. Mm. Thinking, no, I'm going to leave it. Have a look. And then it's bloody gone half hour later. Oh,
that happened to me at the Christmas one. I saw the Phil Spector Christmas album that you have. And I saw it and it was £15, brand new, sealed, reissue. Thought, fantastic, brilliant. I'll come back and get that in a bit. Yeah, walked around for half an hour, went and got a burger, came back and it had gone, hadn't it? Of course.
It's risky business, isn't it? Yeah. If you leave it, it is. Lots of people there.
But I did play a blinder there because I'd been looking for a copy of the Ghostbusters soundtrack for years and years because my mum bought it me after we went to see Ghostbusters. We went to W.H. Smith's in Warsaw and she bought me it straight after we'd been to see the film. And I lent it to someone years ago, Andrew Butler, if you're listening. And I haven't seen it for years, and it's been reissued, and I managed to get a brand new pristine copy of it, which I was very, very happy about.
I remember.
Occasionally it happens, but the joy of finding that record for £17 as well.
Yeah. But yeah, I love it. It doesn't, new or old, it doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah. So say, for instance, you're looking for a classic. Say, I know you were looking for Miles Davis Kind of Blue recently.
I was.
Would you rather have an original first pressing that's not in great condition, or would you rather have a reissue that plays perfectly?
I think I'd always go. I probably couldn't afford it, but I'd always try and get the original stuff. And I think some of the older vinyl, it might not be in the greatest of condition, but the sound of some of it is stunning.
The manufacturing process was ever so slightly different then. And of course, it was analog mastering instead of digital, so it was tape. And there was the inherent distortion that you get from tape. Mm. And I mean, if you asked me, I would say probably I'd go for a new reissue because I like the sound quality. But then I got from Fish Records in Stone, we should give a shout out to them, great little record shop.
Oh,
Fish Records in Stone, I got a Richie Havens album from 1969.
Yeah.
Original pressing. Didn't pay an awful lot for it. I can't remember how much I paid for it now. And it's wonderful. It just sounds absolutely amazing. Yeah, and it doesn't matter that it's a little bit warm. A little bit worn.
Yeah.
Because it sounds so warm.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think the best sounding record that I've got is the original Fleetwood Mac Rumours.
Oh, nice. You got one of the original pressings.
My goodness,
with
me.
A very pretty label.
Yes.
In the centre.
It sounds unbelievable, honestly.
The production on that album is outstanding. Yeah. Was it Roy Thomas Baker, I think, produced that album?
I think it was.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah.
But that sounds amazing. And I've had, you know, I've bought brand new records. Like I bought brand new Jarvis Cocker, the Jarvis album.
Yeah.
Brilliant album.
Yeah.
It's a terrible pressing.
Oh, what a shame.
Jarvis Cocker's, he hasn't bought you a coffee, has he?
No.
I can say it then, yeah.
Not really, yet, Jarvis.
Really bad pressing. Really disappointing.
Candida Doyle, on the other hand, she subscribes all the time, yeah. That can be disappointing when you get particularly like a pre-order in a new record and it's just poor pressing or it's a bad pressing.
So what's the reason behind that, Chris? Because
as far as I understand it, there can be it can be a bad master. It can be when they cut the master disc, they don't do a very good job of it, it's a bad master. It can be a factory where there's poor quality vinyl, or the machine could be running at slightly the wrong temperature, or it can be running too hot, and when the record comes off, it gets put down and the grooves get squashed a little bit. This vinyl, unlike CD, there's so many factors of things that can kind of happen and go wrong in the manufacturing process, you know, that and of course then it can be damaged in transit, you know, badly packaged, you know, obviously the polypropylene sleeves are better than just like the paper or the cardboard sleeves, you know, but it's one of those things, you know, there are so many factors there.
And I've got to say, most new stuff, 99% of it is sensationally good, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
When you get that one that isn't great, It really, it's...
It is. So we've talked about record fairs, and obviously there's been a little bit of a resurgence, although hopefully, fingers crossed, we haven't lost too many of them in lockdown, but there's been a little bit of a resurgence of record shops.
Mm.
Those wonderful caverns of mystery.
Aren't they?
We went round a few in Manchester when we were on the Wakeman tour.
We did.
What was the vinyl resting place?
Vinyl resting place. Bonus points.
Yeah, that was absolutely brilliant. There is a photo of me there, which I may include in the episode description, sitting outside that, which Jamie took.
Taking a rest.
Taking a rest.
Vinyl resting place.
Yeah, can you remember the we went in three record shops, didn't we?
We did. There was Vinyl Resting Place. There was Piccadilly Records.
Oh,
which
well
is
remembered.
Kind of legendary in Manchester.
Yep.
And rightly so. Yep. I mean, what I loved about that was that every single bit of vinyl in that shop, thousands,
yeah,
maybe over 10,000,
yeah,
every single album had a typed sheet.
Well, description of the album.
Description, and often a review that someone working at the shop
had written.
Had actually done, and it was
the attention to detail,
the passion for music. And
because I'm sure, like me, you've bought an album on the strength of a pretty cover before now. You hadn't a clue what it was, but you liked the cover, so...
Absolutely, yeah. But that shot was amazing. They'd also, because we went at Christmas time, so obviously in December, end of year reviews and roundups, the order of the day.
Absolutely.
All round the shop, there was like, you know, their 10 best compilation albums that
That's
year.
Right.
10 best rock albums. And they'd produced, I think about an 80-page booklet.
Yeah.
Where people who work at the shop had kind of given their albums
That's
the year.
Right, I remember that. Those books, yeah.
It's just incredible, because for me, at vinyl and the... Writing
about because obviously you
are quite close. I love
your music journalism side of your
but
journalism.
That one
life.
For me was just an exceptional record.
Fantastic,
shop.
And I seem to remember us sort of dancing down the record aisles to a little bit of French new wave electropop.
We did, didn't we?
Yeah, they had this compilation on which we should have bought.
Do you know what?
Why didn't we buy that?
It was it was their number one.
It was
compilation album of the year, and it was called Pop. Psychedelic.
Oh, very well remembered.
Yeah, French psychedelic music from 1962 to 1990 something.
Yeah.
And it's got
and it was great.
All kinds of stuff on there. It's brilliant. But that's not on streaming services either.
Oh, is it not?
Yeah, you could only buy it. So, yeah, we missed out there.
Je regret.
I think, Chris, if you're dancing in a record shop to an album, if you don't buy it, then you're the fool. Really.
You're dead inside.
You're dead inside.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, I mean, record shops, the other obvious challenge to record shops is online record purchasing. So we've gone from online streaming to online record purchasing. Now, obviously, we've got the big boys like Amazon. But then we've got like Sound of Vinyl and Burning Shed and people like that. Those kind of independent distributors and who are putting things out. And then you've got like Zavvi and HMV who are probably patting themselves on the back because 20 years ago they threw all the record racks out and now the shops are all full of records again. But do you think the online traders are much of a threat to the record shops?
I think you have to say that they are. Like any online operation, is a threat to any physical shop, isn't it? Whether it's vinyl or clothes or whatever it is, they've got a fight on their hands.
Yeah.
But if we go back to what we were saying about, like, that Piccadilly Records or Fish Records in Stone or whichever record shop you go to, there's such a community around it. There's such a passion around it. You feel part of a tribe. And that can obviously never be replicated by online stuff. And if I can, I always try and get it from the record fairs or from the shops.
Brilliant.
Sometimes it's not possible, but you've got to...
You see, I'm an optimist in the way that I think that streaming movies doesn't threaten the cinema because the cinema's a different experience.
Yeah, yeah.
I like to think that the record store, you bump into people, you talk to people, you look through stuff you wouldn't normally look through. Whereas online, it just tends to be pre-orders, things that you actually know are kind of coming out. You don't do any real browsing online. You might go through new releases or whatever, or record store day releases. But I'd like to think optimistically that it's not a massive threat.
I think they've... I mean, you only have to look. I watched a documentary a while back, and it was made in 2012.
Mm.
So only 10 years ago. And it was set in Newcastle upon Tyne, and it was the last in Teesside, the last record shop in Teesside in 2012. There used to be loads, and it was the final one. And it was a documentary about the owner of the shop, how he was trying to keep it going, and now, you know, 2022. You know, record shops are such a resurgence, you know, supported by things like Record Store Day that you mentioned. And I think they just have to do something completely different. It's got to be about that that passion for music. That
Record Store Day is an interesting thing because obviously it came about to promote independent record stores. But I noticed that because we had two Record Store Days, to help the record store shops, because obviously the year before we didn't have one because of total lockdown. But I noticed last year, in between Record Store Day 1 and Record Store Day 2, HMV was saying they'd quite like to be able to stock the Record Store Day things.
It's
kind of not in the spirit of it. It's about the small independent record stores. And I think if HMV start stocking the Record Store Day supplies, then I think that's kind of a threat a little bit too far to the independent record stores, you know.
I think you're right. There's actually a definition, isn't there, that Record Store Day used that I can't remember what it is, but it's they allow chains, but it's only of so... there's a maximum number.
Yes.
So it deliberately... And I think that's a really brave move.
Because you could shift more units, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
But it's all about really giving those... properly independent small places.
Yeah.
That real fighting chance, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I really enjoy it as well. I really look forward to it. I think we were queuing outside about 8:30 in the morning, weren't we, to get into Fish Records.
It's great. I love it. It's like...
talking to people you'd never normally talk to. What are you here for? What are you trying to get?
Yeah, this is it. And I love that whole build-up to it where you get online maybe a month before.
Yeah.
This is what's going to be dropping. And you don't know... when you walk into that particular shop, what records from that Record Store Day drop they're going to have.
They're going to have,
so you could set your heart on something.
Different shops have different records,
And it really is that. The one that I got, I don't know if you remember, I think it was the first Record Store Day last year, whereas years and years and years ago, I used to write a fanzine for a band called Chapter House.
Yes.
And they were a kind of early 90s... long-haired, stare-at-your-shoes, shoegazy guitar band.
Yeah.
And I did this fanzine for them and ended up writing the sleeve notes for their kind of best-of album when they'd split up.
Nice.
And it was a very limited release, only on CD. Mm. And I think it was only for the US market.
Yeah,
They were much bigger in America. And it was re-released. I think it was a 30-year anniversary. So it was re-released on vinyl. And that was so exciting, kind of going into the record shop, not knowing if it would be there. I'd said to him, you know, weeks before, and every week, can you get it? Can you make sure? I was like, oh, I can't. Yeah, there's no guarantee. You know, I don't know. And it was there, and I bought it. Fantastic. And I'll never forget getting home.
Were your notes still there?
They were still there.
Oh,
they,
no way!
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
They just kept it as the original.
Brilliant.
90s, same photograph, same sleeve. And my sleeve notes were there.
Immortalised forever.
Well, I would have been, but they didn't put my name on it. So I'm saying I wrote it. I could be lying. I could be lying through my teeth, but it was me.
That's such a shame, though. It would be so nice if you had your name on there.
I know. I got a thank you in their second album, though, thanks to a list of names. Ooh, I was in there.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's very hardly name-dropping. They're a tiny band, you know.
So, I mean, independent record shops, Record Store Day, vinyl, online, etc. The natural progression there is there's been some supply problems over the last year. I'm not going to blame Adele.
Everyone else is.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the problem, as I understand it from what I've read, is the majors tie up the pressing plants with massive orders, like 500,000 pressings, when the indie labels are asking for, like, can we have 1,000 of these? Can we have 2,000 of these? And obviously, if you've got an order for 500,000 coming in and you've got an order for 1,000 coming in, you're going to prioritise the order for 500,000, are you?
Absolutely.
And of course, it's become really trendy to listen to vinyl in lockdown, so everyone's bought these kind of little Crosley record player things. Mm. All the kids. And so obviously, like, everyone wants the new Adele album on vinyl. You know, it probably comes with a download code as well, so you can download it, and they've probably got Spotify or other streaming services at the same time as well. How do you feel about that? Do you think it's actually realistically had an impact? Have you noticed any albums delayed coming out that you've been waiting for?
I think loads of... I've tried. I didn't, when I got back into vinyl, I didn't just want to kind of rebuy my collection that, you know, that was on CD or, so I've really tried to buy, and I love finding new bands and new stuff. So I've tried to kind of support smaller bands, and it obviously it's those labels, those bands, that smaller independent stuff that the pressing issues hitting. Mm. I mean, for example, one of my favourite independent labels is called Reckless Yes. And they've got this brilliant kind of subscription model.
Okay.
Going right back to the beginning with, like, Pact. And so you can join them as a member. So,
oh, okay.
And there's a gold level, there's a silver level, there's a bronze level.
We're not talking like the old Britannia Music Club, are we? Do you remember that?
I do, yeah. Yeah, that was brilliant.
So how does this work? What happens?
So you pay your subscription on whichever level you want. So the bronze subscription may be a number of CDs from the releases they've got planned that year, downloads. Nice. I think I took the silver one, which was no CDs, just every release they do in 2022, I'll get it on vinyl.
Oh, nice.
And I love the idea of that.
That's really nice. So it's just that label. It's just their... Yeah,
it's just Reckless.
Just their artist. So
yeah, that's right. And they've got some... I mean, anyone, just have
that's
a look at...
That's a great way of supporting an independent, isn't it?
It is, because then they get money up front.
Yeah.
You're supporting them throughout the year. It's not just the odd purchase.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, with a lot of stuff, if you support something, sometimes you've got to back it as well, haven't you? You know, it's important to kind of...
Put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And but obviously, I'm getting Reckless Yes vinyls this year, but it's going to hit that, definitely. There's going to be a delay on the vinyl, so it might be that I won't start to get my vinyl. I'll probably get a glut of it later in the year.
Yeah.
So it's definitely hitting them, and... If anyone's interested in how this has hit independent labels, just look out for Sarah Lay, who runs Reckless Yes, and she's also a music journalist, a damn fine one, and she's written lots of stuff. if you just find Reckless Yes
online. I'll put a link in the bio for the episode.
She's really kind of hit the nail on the head about just how tough it is right now, when it should be a renaissance for independent labels and independent record shops.
I've certainly noticed one or two of my pre-orders should have come before Christmas. They came after Christmas kind of thing.
Yeah, it's
been some supply problems. So.
Yeah, but I don't know what the answer is because the answer is more pressing plants. But who's going to...
Unfortunately, I mean, if you've watched any of the kind of documentaries on YouTube, a lot of the pressing plants and a lot of the machines were made in the 50s, 40s and 50s, and a lot of the pressing plants are in the Eastern Bloc, for want of a better term, so Poland, former Czech Republic, Russia, because obviously they were still, when they were behind the Iron Curtain, they were still pressing vinyl there because they weren't pressing CDs because of the costs at the time. So they were still cutting things onto vinyl. Have you ever seen those, just side points, have you ever seen those records cut into an X-ray?
No. You're going to play the Tomorrow's World theme tune again? What the hell?
I feel like I should.
What the hell?
When it was particularly like East Berlin and Prague, when there was a shortage of vinyl and there was no money and they couldn't get the vinyl, there was a lot of bootlegs. They used to cut bootlegs into old X-rays. Wow. So you'd get the old X-rays. So you see someone's broken ankle or something, and it'd have like a Beatles record on it or something. You know, these things are worth a fortune now. The sound quality is appalling. Obviously, they're like the old flexi discs you used to get in magazines in the 80s. Yeah. Remember those?
Oh my word! Yeah,
80s, 70s, was it? Probably 70s.
Even the 90s, you know.
Really?
Remember early 90s? Yeah, getting one. Yeah. I can't remember which magazine it was, but yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
In the early 90s.
Yeah. Wasn't Looking, was it?
Oh, I used to love Looking.
Eagle Annual. NME.
Was Looking the one that all it was basically posters and lyrics?
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty much it. Yeah.
What more do you need?
But loads of free gifts as well. I got an adamant ring once.
I remember getting something adamant.
Oh, it's like a pendant, I think. It wasn't a ring. It was like a skull and crossbone.
I got like a key. I think it was a key ring thing adamant on. I swapped it with Michelle Creswell at school, who was in my class, for just this funny pencil that she had. Still hurts. There's a pained expression on my face.
Moving swiftly on. Thanks for that, Jamie. That was absolutely brilliant. So it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here. Just before you go, though, I wanted to ask you about something else I know you've become obsessed with during lockdown.
Oh, okay.
No, not that. It's got to be broadcastable. No. I believe you've become a bit of a fan of American football.
I have. Yeah.
Tell us, who do you support and how did you get into it?
It's a bizarre thing, isn't it? I got into it about 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm.
Match of the Day, Saturday night. This is quite a segue, isn't it?
Mm.
But Match of the Day, Saturday night. I was just getting really fed up of the Premier League. He was finding it really boring.
Mm.
And immediately after Match of the Day was the NFL show. And so one week it just rolled into the NFL show.
Right.
So I started watching it and just thought, this will be interesting.
Mm.
And I just love learning about new things. I've just always got that kind of thirst to...
So let me just check. The American football thing is the thing where they wear the shoulder pads and the helmets and they charge at each other.
Correct.
Right, okay.
That's the one.
That's the thing.
That's the one. Okay. It looks, if you... To the untrained eye, you look at it, it just looks like 22 beefcakes in crash helmet and pads just charging around. But it's a fun
rugby for softies.
Rugby for softies. Yeah. Hey, they hit each other.
Yeah, I know they massively do.
It's crazy.
Because it's such a phenomenal thing over there because a lot of the time, if you can't afford a college education, you can get into college through a sports scholarship.
Scholarship, yeah.
So sport is encouraged from a very young age because you might get your fees paid if you can get a... You know, it's not necessarily... You don't want to necessarily be a professional athlete or sports person, but you have that chance of getting sponsored.
Without a doubt, yeah. And in America, a lot of the schools... there's a great book called Friday Night Lights, which is about a high school football team. And this school, it's a massive school, and the budget for the American football team is something like 10 times more than the science department.
Fantastic.
Which just shows their priorities. Yeah. They're obsessed by it.
Yeah.
So yeah, for me, it's again, it was something new. So I've bought that many books and reading about offensive formations and the different defensive shell schemes and cover two, cover three. It's just incredible. And I spend so much time now, it's really unhealthy, I think, reading about it, listening to podcasts, watching the games.
Have you got the NFL game on the PlayStation as well?
I have, the Madden.
Madden, that's it. Couldn't think of the name then.
Madden, He actually passed away, John Madden, just before Christmas. And he was an incredible man. He was a kind of coach. Yeah. He went into TV analyst and stuff like that.
No, I mean, sports, and just to get back to that, sports in America is, it's such a family thing. It's such a big thing. We've both been to the States. I've not been to an American football game, but I've been to a baseball game. And what struck me there is it was the LA Lakers versus the San Francisco Giants. And what struck me there was there's no segregation between the fans. You'd got a Giants and a Lakers fan sat next to each other. Two mates, best mates, obviously, one supported one team, one supported the other. And then when San Francisco lost, the other guy's putting his arm around him as they're going out and stuff. And none of that kind of segregation in there.
So I think in the States, it is, I think, the culture, and it always has been, that kind of family thing. The team that I follow, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
And if you, before a game, there's something called tailgating. And it's not kind of bumper to bumper on the car park. Well, it kind of is. There's basically a mass barbecue before every game. So if a game
kicks, I'm in.
Yeah. It's the barbecue state. And if you go to the match, I'd love to go. If you go to the match, it might kick off. A lot of the games are on a Sunday lunchtime.
Yeah.
Which again is very, very different kind of time to football in this country, or until recently. But you'd arrive, kick off as 1 o'clock. They get there at like 8, 9 in the morning.
Wow.
And everyone pitches up with, all the barbecues. And it's just incredible. You see these aerial shots, thousands of people. And it's a real kind of gathering. The other team's fans are welcome as well. It's this real kind of beautiful community of people. I can't explain it, but it's joyous in America. I mean, we're recording this the end of January, and we've just had an American football. It's the playoffs at the minute, so it's the kind of
Super Bowl soon, isn't it?
Super Bowl soon, so it's the knockout games leading up to the Super. It's when the shit hits the fan. It gets so exciting, and there were four games at the weekend which were all classics. They were absolutely incredible, and each one ended with a field goal in the final second or a touchdown in overtime, which is like a golden goal in football.
Nice.
And this is serious stuff. You know, you think what's at stake for these teams, it's Super Bowl or bust. There's nothing else. Yeah. There's no other tournament. This is it. Everything's geared up for the Super Bowl. And for the fans, the atmosphere in these stadiums was incredible. But for example, Kansas City Chiefs beat the Buffalo Bills, and it was a heart-wrenching loss for the Bills. I felt so sorry for them. Mm. It was just, sorry, I'm ranting now. They scored a touchdown, Buffalo, with 13 seconds to go to put them in the lead. They're in the next round in the championship game.
Yeah.
that's it, they're through. Except Kansas came back.
No way. In less than 13 seconds?
Yeah. Wow. Came back. It was just this, like, back and forward. It was. They're calling it the greatest game in American football history.
Yeah.
And Buffalo suffered an agonising defeat. It was agonising for them to lose that way.
Wow.
And yet their supporters in the stadium, you know, there's no trouble. No,
yeah.
I don't know why that is.
Thanks for listening to A Couple of Drips. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can on Twitter. Just search for @CoupleOfDrips.
Yeah, please do follow us on the social media if you can. We're trying to build a profile, you know, sooner or later, one of these things will happen. Well, Jamie, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here. I have one last question for you before you go. And I think you kind of touched on it earlier, but I want to ask it you formally. Would you say you're a man of obsessions when it comes to hobbies?
That's a good question, isn't it?
I thought so. I'll just sit back.
I think...
You're on your own.
I think I probably am. I think I've got a slightly obsessional personality, I think. For instance, with music now, my good friend Kevin, for quite some time, has been trying to get me to listening to more jazz. He's a jazz obsessive.
Nice.
And so right now...
It's an obvious joke. Carry on. Sorry.
But, yeah, so now I'm kind of throwing myself into that and reading a lot about particularly, like, late 50s jazz and Blue Note. And I just, yeah, I kind Brilliant. Of just...
Blue Note, Columbia, those kind of labels, yeah.
And I
kind
of just throw myself
Brilliant.
Into things.
So have you got a jazz recommendation for the listeners, then?
Wow, where do you start? I already mentioned it today, Miles Davis, Kind of Blue. Mm. Which is kind of seen as the greatest jazz record ever made by some people.
Love that album. Love a bit of Dave Brubeck myself as
Dave
well.
Dave Brubeck's amazing. Yeah,
got a fantastic record off my sister for Christmas as well. Yeah. Jazz Impressions of Eurasia. I nearly forgot the title then.
That's Dave Brubeck. Yeah.
Dave Brubeck.
Yeah, that's really good, isn't it? Yeah. For me, though, the one that I'm no expert and I'm just enjoying, you know, discovering all this stuff. Mm. Charles Mingus.
Oh
my
bass player extraordinaire.
He is incredible.
He's amazing.
An album called Mingus R-Um.
R-Um. It's a great album.
Oh, rocks like a beast. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
I love it. So, yeah, I'm just really enjoying getting my teeth into that and
Fantastic.
Learning more. Because would you say you're obsessional about your hobbies?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, whether it be kitting out the recording studio for a podcast or whether it be, you know, vinyl collecting or music or whatever, you know, yeah, totally. You're either annoyed or not. I've stopped doing hobbies in the past because I kind of, I didn't have time to dedicate to them and I thought they were falling by the wayside and I either couldn't financially commit or just couldn't commit with the time and I've reached a point in my life where I said like no I've got the hobbies I like, I've got the hobbies I love, I need to spend the time doing them the honor. But yeah, totally obsessive. I mean, you know, I was like, I need some more Kallax cubes from IKEA to if you're listening IKEA and you want to send me some Kallax cubes, I'd like black and white mixed, please.
They look good in your living room.
They do look good. Thank you. I have now run out of space.
It's either buy some new Kallax or stop buying vinyl.
Yeah.
And I know what you're going to do.
Move, probably.
Do you know what, though? What do you think... Because they say that the Brits are kind of a nation of hobbyists, don't they?
Yeah.
We do get obsessed about these things. And I'm just wondering why, again, like in America, there's no violence at sporting events. I wonder what it is about generalising massively. You know, why these things are so important to us, I think is what I'm asking. Why do we get so passionate about these things?
We've always collected things, haven't we, as Brits, you know, other countries for a while. That's a very interesting question, actually. I mean, what is it about us that we feel like we need to own these things, or we need to possess these things in order to do it. But then why are we so obsessive with everything? You know, like if you're running, why do you have to then run a marathon? If you're, you know,
yeah. No, it's
if
true,
you're
yeah.
collecting vinyl, then why have you got to try and get?
I think it's they just enrich your life, don't they? You know, we work, we have limited time. And I think those things that you're passionate about, if it's American football or if it's building Big Ben out of matchsticks or if it's whatever it is, it just gives you such richness to your life.
It does. It does. I mean, I was interesting. I follow a YouTube channel and podcast of a guy called Tom Buck. And he runs a podcast and YouTube channel, which I highly recommend, guys. I'll put a link in the blurb, called The Enthusiasm Project. And he said a very interesting thing the other day about starting a podcast. And one of the things is, you know, you can look at things when you're a creator, you can look at things from a number of points of view. If you look at it from the point of view that I want to make money from it and I want to get loads of hits and I want to all this stuff I've invested in and that and I want to get this return, he said you're probably going to be disappointed. You know, you're probably going to set yourself up for a fail, but it's important to do the creation thing for the sake of doing it and doing it for yourself and for the sake of the hobby. If someone else listens to it and likes it, great, but if they don't, you know, just actually doing it is a big achievement. And if no one listens, it's not a reason to not do it. You know,
I agree.
So, I mean, that's certainly been my motivation with this, although we are getting more listeners. But, you know, it's fun doing it and it's fun having a conversation with people. And I started having conversations with people that ended up being so interesting. I was thinking, well, maybe if someone was earwigging on this conversation, it might be kind of interesting. That's where it comes from. Which just reminds me to slip in, we have got coming up later in the year, hopefully this side of Easter with a bit of luck, but you never know. Hopefully got a couple of specials coming up to do with mental health over lockdown. Got two panels lined up, a panel of people who've used mental health services during lockdown and a panel of mental health experts and counsellors. So do look out on the Couple of Drips site for those. Those will be a couple of specials, not quite sure what we're going to call them yet, but those will be coming up. One final question, Jamie, which I forgot to slip in earlier, but album of the year last year?
There were two for me last year.
Go for it.
I cannot separate them. One is Self-Esteem, Prioritize Pleasure. Absolutely.
I love the single off that, actually.
Yeah. I do this all the time.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal record from a phenomenal performer. She's gonna be
she's on the new Nevermind the Buzzcocks, actually. She's really funny.
She's from Rotherham and has got that real northern sense of humour. Her songwriting, she's gonna be huge. I'm convinced of it. And then the other one was Little Sims, Sometimes I Might Be Introvert. Again, just stunning.
Fantastic.
And I can't separate them. I've tried. They're just mighty. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. I mean, if we're talking about albums that I bought last year, I would probably say that Richie Havens one, although it's from 1969, is something I've listened to, and it's absolutely phenomenal.
Beautiful.
I have to give a shout out as well. Although I'm building up, I've kind of had three here. Have to give a shout out to Tea for the Tillerman 2 by Cat Stevens, the reworking of Tea for the Tillerman with different band, same band, orchestras, extra layers, new things. And on the one track, Father and Son, when it's the son's point of view, it's 21-year-old Cat Stevens singing. Mm. And when it's the father's point of view, it's 71-year-old Cat Stevens singing, and you can hear how his voice has matured. I should say Yusef Islam as well, to give him his modern name. But yeah, that's a phenomenal album. But I have to say my number one album of the year was an album that could have only been made in lockdown, and it's the great Colin Hay from Men at Work.
Ah, okay.
And he did an album in lockdown called, fantastically, I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself. Which obviously started with that Dusty Springfield cover, but has covers of Wichita Lineman on it, Waterloo Sunset, and various other tracks. But it's absolutely phenomenal. It came out of a project. He came out of boredom when he was in lockdown, and his touring got suspended, and he just started doing covers of songs that had influenced him, and tells a lovely story on the album cover about when. Because he's an expat, and he went over the what were they called the £10 Aussies or something they were called. I think that's probably the wrong name, but you could go to Australia for £10 or something, and £10 Poms, that's I think they were called.
Yeah.
And he said he remembers in the docks and going on the boat, and Waterloo Sunset was the thing he heard as the boat pulled out. And so it's kind of evoked those memories of emigrating, but also being locked down, being in a strange place. And it's just a great album, and I got it on coloured vinyl, of course. Oh. And it's absolutely beautiful. Yeah. But
do you know what? It's really bad of me. You've talked to me about that album many times, and you must listen to it. I haven't properly listened to it yet.
Well,
it's really bad.
Well, you should listen to it on vinyl here.
Mm.
We should have it as a listening party, because I think the most enjoyable thing about vinyl, as opposed to a playlist, is kind of a shared thing, I guess. But streaming is kind of a solo, joyless thing, you know, listening on your phone or your ear pods or whatever. But I think the thing about vinyl and putting it on, it's a ritual as well, putting it on the turntable, you know, it's a thing. Inviting friends round and just saying, listen to this, you know, that reminds me of being a teenager. Listen to this, you know.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful...
Same for me.
Before kind of thing. You know.
I think the ritual, maybe it comes back to that obsession that we were talking about, but rituals are often... part of obsession, aren't they?
And absolutely.
And I think if it's making a coffee, you know, that kind of... I work from home, and that kind of ritual at about 10:30, getting the Aeropress out or the Hario, and just that process.
Oh, yeah.
It's just wonderful. And vinyl's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't... I feel my blood pressure...
Do you have a croissant with your coffee? I'll take that as a no.
I'm struggling to admit this because
it's
I know
a nice combination of good. Well, because you know I'm a bit of a jam obsessive, but yeah, I love a croissant with the coffee. You got to taste the coffee first so it doesn't get spoiled by the things, but then the contrast, particularly if you've got a light lemony fruity coffee with the jam and the croissant.
Do you know what mine is? Not croissant, it is dates and nuts.
Ooh,
if you get some, you know, like the
eat me dates.
They're lovely. So it's like nature's caramel, isn't it? It's just beautiful. So beautiful. Beautiful. Them with some nuts.
Very nice.
Oh my goodness, mate.
I haven't had dates for a long time, but I used to. I had an old boss, Jane Reeves, when I was at Telford College, and we went over the one Christmas, and she used to take dates or figs, and she used to cut the stones out, and she used to stuff them with Stilton. Absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Yeah.
Oh, that'd work with some coffees, that.
Yeah,
wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe like
I haven't had dates for a long time. I do love a fig roll, though.
Yeah, I've got a.
You draw the line there. Too dry?
I don't know what it is about them. Yeah, there's just something. I might like the taste, but there's something about the texture and the appearance of it.
Yeah.
One shouts dog biscuit.
And then, that is true.
And then two, it just looks like that. I don't know. There's just a feeling of kind of
dead fly biscuits.
Yeah.
And
austerity and kind of.
Yeah.
But then saying that
fig roll on the saucer, one fig roll, single fig roll, on the saucer with an espresso. Something about that.
Now that, yeah, I can see that because the dryness of the biscuit, you've got that lovely dark espresso to wash it down, and then. Yeah, the food.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, brilliant. And on that mental image, Jamie Summerfield, I want to thank you very much for being my very special guest on the return episode.
I've enjoyed it so much.
It's been an absolute joy, and to actually do a podcast with you in the room with me as opposed to on clean feed, which was great, but you don't get the interaction that you get when you're actually in the room with someone. Yeah. So I wanted to do it justice by doing another one with you where we're actually in the room together. Yeah, that's been an immense amount of fun. We must book a meeting to get through some records together and drink some more coffee.
As always.
It's been fantastic. I will put all your social media links and stuff in the bump. Follow the links on there, have a look, and I'll put all Jamie's social media stuff. Thank you very much for being my special guest, Jamie. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I hope you'll come on again in the future, and I hope you've had a good time.
I certainly will. It's been amazing. Thank you. Great to have the podcast back. Brilliant. Keep it going.
Thanks a lot. See you soon.
Listening to A Couple of Drips. The show was conceived and presented by Chris Granger and is a Cup the Mic production.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, Chris here. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to support the production of future episodes, then subscriptions are available. Simply click on the support button in the episode description. See you next time.